Hey, listeners. I'm Karen Riley Jeffers, NCSM's Eastern 2 Director. Welcome to our series, Learning with Leaders, Everyone Belongs in Mathematics. Thank you for joining me and my co-host, Abel Maestas, the host of Teaching That Counts, as we talk with both leaders and influencers about their math journeys and contributions. Today, we will hear from our special guests about their inspiration, perceptions, and insights regarding instructional decisions that make the mathematics space welcoming and engaging to all. Listen and learn about how beliefs, practices, and policies must continue to advance to ensure that each and every person feels a sense of belonging in mathematics.
All right, welcome everyone to this month's NCSM Learning with Leaders podcast. We are here about 2 days, right? Am I 2 days from Christmas?
2 days.
So this is going to drop in January. So if I say Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays, everyone's going to say, well, we're already past that, but I'm going to say it anyway. I hope that everybody had a great holiday season. And for those teachers and educators out there, obviously, I hope you had a very restful break, which I'm just starting. So we are super excited. And again, I'll introduce myself, Abel Maestas, and my co-host,
Karen Riley Jeffers.
And again, we are so happy to have you join us this month. We are super excited to welcome Asali Smith to our podcast this month. And we'll just say hi.
Hi, everybody.
Hi. I'll introduce a little bit about Asali, and then we'll talk to her for this this podcast, which I'm super excited about.
Me too.
With over 25 years of experience in K-12 math education across 3 countries, which I'm super interested in finding about what those 3 countries are, Asali Smith has dedicated her career to fostering children's mathematical confidence and supporting educators in teaching mathematics conceptually. Specializing in K-8 mathematics education, Asali is passionate about empowering young learners and their teachers to develop a deep, true understanding of mathematical concepts, believing that every child can succeed in math. As the owner and founder of Number Navigators, Asali addresses the challenge of math content confidence among K-8 educators and believes that when teachers feel supported in deepening their own understanding of mathematics, they can create classrooms where curiosity, discussion, and sense-making thrive. So once again, we'd like to welcome Asali Smith to our podcast this month.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
Thank you again for being here. Even though Abel just introduced you, if you will share some of your journey in education that has led you to your current work with our listeners.
So I guess I'll kind of weave in where the 3 countries came in too in this process. So I started my educational journey. It's funny, when I actually did my undergrad, I decided I was going to be a biochemistry major. That's what I was going to do. And while I was in my first year, my freshman year, I started tutoring students, other classmates of mine who were really struggling with mathematics. And I realized I actually like this more than I like the biochemistry. And so after my first year, I changed my major to secondary mathematics education. And it just brought something out in me that still to this day fosters this love that I have for mathematics. I'm a self-professed and very proud math nerd. And so when I got an offer to teach in Houston, Texas, a place I'd never been, I'd never stepped foot in Texas, I said, I'll take it. I just want to be in a place where I can teach mathematics. And I started teaching middle school mathematics. And that's where I started to see some of the, you know, those areas of unfinished learning in our students, where they just wanted to know, like, just tell me what to do, miss. That's what they, just tell me what to do, miss, you know, and they'll do it. And, you know, at first, you know, it was kind of working. Right? They would have these skills, but they wouldn't last long. And it would just be something that would constantly haunt me. You know, I can't just teach these, you know, these tricks, these shortcuts that would work in the moment and would make someone feel like they had success. But then over the long haul, you know, there were still questions. There were still like, I still don't understand the why. And so that's when I started to really delve into what is it that our students need that is going to allow them to experience the mathematics in a way that not only would it stick, but they know why it's sticking. And if for some reason something didn't come together, something didn't gel, they still had a concept, they still had something concrete that they could, quote unquote, fall back on, right? They could use those experiences that they had with mathematics and really propel themselves on their own and not have to wonder, like, did I remember the right steps or did I remember the right rules? And so I started to see that almost immediately. I taught in Texas for about 3 years. And then I started a program at Columbia Teachers College, where I was able to continue studying not just education, but how technology kind of gets infused in that. And so while I was at Teachers College in Columbia, I was teaching in New Jersey. So I was at school in New York and I was teaching in New Jersey. And once again, started to see some of the same patterns. And this was a while ago. So this was back in, so I was in Texas from 1999. And so this must have been around 2002. When I was in New Jersey, and those are the times when you go in a classroom and there wouldn't be an online resource for you. And there wouldn't be, you know what I mean, all those tools that teachers have now. So you really just had to make a way. And in the closet, I'll never forget it, in the closet, there was a stack of connected math books. I don't know if you remember connected math. And so when we used the activities that were in there, I noticed that they were all tied to some context. They were tied to some learning, but rooted in a real life experience. And I noticed that when we were learning integers and we were playing Jeopardy, like they were actually getting to know the rules of, you know, integers without me saying, well, when you have a larger positive number and you're adding a, you know what I mean? Instead of just going through the steps, they were saying, well, I had 400 points, miss, and I know I didn't lose all of the points, so I shouldn't be in the negative. Like they were able to have those conversations. And so it really started to connect that my students need to have an experience. They need to have context that they can tie to their learning. So that's when I started to pick up steam a little bit. And when I decided I was going to transition from my school in New Jersey, that's when I had an opportunity to teach in England. And I taught in Northampton, England. Turns out I had a family member there, which was great. And I taught grades, it would be the equivalent of the grades, say, 3 through 11. So I would see every grade every day. Like it could be fifth grade and then 11th grade and then third grade and then sixth grade. And I would see my students every day. But the one thing that was consistent is I was still seeing students who just wanted to, you know, what are the rules? Just show it to me and I can memorize it. And they would realize after time that it wasn't sticking. So I started to use my tools from my connected math library and again was able to see the connection that students were making to the content through context, through real life experience. And it just really lit up, you know, something in me that recognized students need to have a connection to mathematics. They need to have a connection to why are we even learning this? How many times have we heard that in the classroom, right? Why are we even learning this, miss? How does this going to help me in the real world? Well, this kind of shut all of that down because every context or every problem we were solving had a context that they could actually say, oh, so that's why we're doing it, you know? And so being able to make that connection really, really helped. After that, I would actually say that my experience there really spurred me into seeing what it was like in other states, other countries. And that's when I started working with a high school program in Canada. I went back to my roots. That's where I was born and raised. And I taught through some programs, high school programs there. And again, seeing some of the same patterns, you could be in a different place, you could have a different book, you could have, you know, all these different standards, so to speak, but some of the same trends were popping up. And so when I moved back to the United States, I was really able to hone in on, you know, what is it that our students need in the classroom that's really going to allow them to have this math stick. And when I came back to New Jersey, I came back as a coach. So I was actually able to now apply all of the things that I was trying in the classroom and trying it in all of my teachers' classrooms and starting to see that traction once the mindset was there and they recognized that it's not just a bag of tricks to use. They were really starting to see that students were connecting to the mathematics, that they were able to connect ideas one to another. They were able to connect concepts one to another because they weren't just learning it in the moment, they were learning it over time. And so, you know, that's really my journey. I went from being a coach to then being a supervisor where I had a lot of impact on the actual curriculum, you know, and being able to bring in assessments that weren't just, you know, multiple choice, but really ask students to reason, really ask them to explain their thinking, really ask them to show varied representations of the mathematics as they were learning it. And in doing so, really just being able to open up the eyes of the teachers was a huge stepping stone as well, but a huge needed stepping stone. For a student to be able to have access to mathematics in that way, a teacher has to have, you know, the freedom to be able to do that. And so now that is really what, that's that podium, that soapbox that I'll stand on, you know, that mathematics has to be an experience where students can connect ideas to what they already know. Not just misconceptions, but conceptions, right? What they know, that our students come with experiences that impact the mathematics that they learn. And that is our job as teachers to use what we know about our students to reach them through the mathematics. So I don't know if I kind of went around the long way, but this stuff excites me so much only because I know the value in it. And as our teachers start to gain that confidence in the content, they're more willing to take risks in the sense of using context and, you know, being able to connect to what students may bring culturally to the classroom, right? And all of those things. So that's where I've come. So after 1999, we're in 26, 27 years, I've been able to, you know, hopefully impact a lot of classrooms and, you know, change some students' lives to love mathematics.
I have a follow-up question.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much there that I have. There's so many follow-ups that I could go with, too. That just so much. I'm going to let Karen go. Go ahead. What's the follow-up question there?
Well, for elementary, and just thinking about just being in a big district, this is my second district. It's the second district that I've worked in. And every district seems to have their own curriculum resource that they use. So one of the things that you mentioned was teachers having that freedom to be able to make these connections or bring in the problems that are going to give students that experience so that they can make those connections and make sense of the mathematics that they're learning. So what tidbits, what did you find in your work? Because I'm assuming you must have interacted with some systems or schools that may have had the same thing. So how did you work around that or incorporate that so that students could still have that experience and teachers not feel like, oh, I can't do that because about, you know, the leadership says we have to follow the resource that we're given.
So in my experience in the districts that I've been in, there was always a little bit of leeway there where, you know, I am using the resource, right? But then we were given the breath to be able to adjust the questions so that they reflected tasks, or we were able to, you know, we're still moving along the same trajectory as far as pacing is concerned and making sure that we're hitting all the standards and things like that. But my experience, you know, once people were seeing the results, they were more and more okay with saying, you know what, let's take, you know, the word problems that were stuck at the end of the chapter and let's bring them to the front of the chapter, right? And be able to use them in that way. So the experiences that I've had when I'm in districts, I've had a very, very supportive people around me that would allow those types of licenses to make. And I know that's not what happens in every school district. I'm actually working with a school district now that, you know, you better stay in line with what this says, right? And, you know, slowly but surely, I think I'm starting to change some mindsets around that. But we're kind of using the same ideas. Yes, we're using the resource, but we just added in this piece and we removed all of this information because we want our students to think that through, you know? And so they're still seeing the work. They're still seeing the problems that are in the textbook or on, you know, on the online resource. But we're just kind of tweaking it in a way where we're giving our students access, right? We want to be sure that we're giving them access to the problems. But we also want to make sure that the students are the ones doing the heavy lifting, right? And so when we, you know, when we're allowed a little bit of leeway there, don't leave that door open. I'm going to take it, right? We got to make sure that we, you know, get our foot in there and able to really see that difference. The other way that I find that there's a little more leeway is in the actual instructional practices, right? And so when you could have a lot of the resource and maybe it has to stay this way, but the way we actually implement it might be, you know, a little more geared to the mindset you want the students to have, the instructional routines that you want the teacher to create in the classroom, the culture that you want them to create in the classroom. And so there was a little more leeway there as well. So instead of just asking for a right or wrong answer, we're going to start asking, well, how did you know that, right? We're going to start asking, where did you notice a connection between what Sarah did and what Johnny did? Right. And really kind of working in instructional pieces that will help move that conversation forward.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it gets me thinking about what is it called again? High quality curriculum or high quality instructional materials, HQIM, right? And a push for HQIM. And really not every curriculum, not every resource is made the same.
Absolutely.
And some resources are geared nicely towards a task-based, getting kids to think, getting kids to discuss and have those embedded, and some are not. And so how do we get the teachers to move forward in the progress that we know that they need, that we're hoping that is necessary for kids to be thinkers and to use context and all those things you were talking about. And I think you hit one piece right on the money there. And that was changing some of the thoughts on district leaders and leaders on the use of instructional materials and how we can utilize them, but still be able to do the things that are important for kids. So, What kind of ways, I guess, have you worked with the district? Like, what ways can we work with district leaders to start to kind of change their mind on what mathematics instruction should look like?
Yeah, I've been doing professional development for quite a few years. And the one way that I've noticed has a large impact on leaders is for them to experience what it's supposed to feel like, right? We can talk till we're blue in the face as to what it's supposed to look like, but not until you actually feel it and you're in it, almost as a student, right? Where you're actually hearing the questions that are being posed, where you're actually, you know, experiencing the problems in the way that students are experiencing them. Can you really interact with the mathematics in the way that that's necessary? And so a lot of times when I'm doing professional development, it's not just here's what we do. This is a list of what classroom looks like, or this is the list of the agenda of the classroom and what it should look like. It's let's do this problem. Let's do this problem in the way that it's really intended. And then at the end, say, okay, what did you hear me say? What did you see me do? And how did you feel about that? Like, how did you experience that? And a lot of times you have people saying, I knew it was supposed to feel a certain way, but I didn't know it was supposed to feel like that, right? And then the leaders start to go into classrooms, and because they've experienced it, because they've felt it, they know what it feels like now when they go into classrooms and it doesn't feel like that. And so a big piece of the puzzle is being able to, you know, expose leaders, teachers, of course our students, but leaders and teachers to what it's supposed to look and feel like, I think is a big important piece. Instead of just saying, you know, try this, do this, right? And just giving a list of things to do and kind of talk it through, actually feeling it. Let's do that task. And they'll start to feel what it's supposed to feel like.
That's a challenge sometimes when working with adults, because yeah. I have teachers who feel like doing the math is feeling or being treated as though they're one of the students.
Yeah.
And with our leaders, they don't want to feel as if they're being treated as students and or teachers. And so the nuance to which that's done for our teachers and our leaders is really tricky, because it is important. And in mathematics, in our world, we know that the way to really fully anticipate, to understand, to internalize and all, ask the questions and all of those things, we have to do the math. No matter how many times that we've done it before, we still need to do it for the new set of students that we are going to have in front of us, so that we can tailor it to their needs. But that's still something that a lot of us are still like working through in terms of how to mesh, you know, so that they still feel respected in their positions, but and we're still able to share the importance and the value and the power of digging deep into the math for the very things that you said.
I agree. I know exactly what you're saying. And, you know, I always wonder what the pushback is, right? I always wonder, you know, is there some type of discomfort there, right? And so is there almost an avoidance of it? And I can cloak that in, I'm a leader, so I shouldn't have to do those things, right? And so, you know, I think I do a pretty good job of kind of nestling, you know, the fact that we're actually doing math, because it's important to do the math, and then kind of bookending it with, as a leader now, right, you're really making sure that that summary conversation you're having isn't just about the math itself, but it's now, how does that translate as a leader in the classroom, right? So when you're looking at those, you know, mathematical look fors, those eight mathematical look fors, how does that show up in what we just experienced, right? So just making sure that yes, we are doing the math just like the students would, or we are planning this task just like the teachers would, right? But we have to know those pieces in order to, you know, move forward as a leader. Not to say that you have to know every answer of every classroom that you go into, but you do have to know what the experience for our students should feel like. And I think this is just a very important piece. I wouldn't you know, run it into the ground that every time I do a PD, we're all going to do math. You know what I mean? But I think it's important for them to have that experience because they will always remember it. They will always remember how they felt when they interacted with you, with that, you know, with that PD leader, and how they interacted with the mathematics, how it felt, so that when they go into the classroom, they're like, yes, this classroom feels like that. This classroom feels the way I felt when I was experiencing the mathematics. And that's what we want. We want them to know what the feeling should be, right? We want them to know what that experience should be. And the only way you can do that is to dive right in and do it.
And right. And let's be honest, some of them do come in with their own math anxiety.
Yes.
And their own math trauma that they had when they were, you know, they're not all math teachers or had experience as math teachers. And as we know, many teachers, elementary and secondary, that go on to be administrators have had some sort of math trauma, math anxiety in their life. And so that comes through in their leadership sometimes as well. This brings me back to our series, which, as you know, is Everyone Belongs in Mathematics. And we talked about teachers, we talked about students, we even talked about administrators here. So I just want to kind of bring it back to belonging. What does it mean for all of these groups to belong in mathematics? And how some of the work that you do with each of these help them to, I guess, shear up some of that anxiety so they feel like they belong?
Yeah. So, you know, belonging in math, it's more than just, you know, you're in the room, right? You're in the, you've enrolled in this course, right? It's really that you've been positioned as a thinker in a room. That's how I see it, right? So if I'm in this space, I belong here because you're allowing me to think here. You know, it doesn't mean that I have to be fast at math. It doesn't mean I have to be perfect at math. It doesn't mean that I have to be quiet, right, to be considered good at math. I think, you know, belonging gives somebody the space to reason, space to make sense of, ask questions. You know, it's safe to ask questions. And most importantly, you know, when I belong in a place, it's okay there for me to grow. I may not be where everybody else is, but I'm going to be moving towards, you know, those goals that the teacher may have for me or that I have for myself. You know, and so when, you know, belonging to me shows up in children and adults, when they feel, you know, safe enough to try, they feel safe enough to be wrong sometimes, right? To be able to revise their thinking because what they started with may not be where they ended, right? When... I thought of this the other day, when math is become something that you do rather than done to you, right? That idea of, you know, I got to do this, right? We want this to be something that's joyful. And it's really just the difference between, you know, like performative in a way versus actually participating in it. You know, and being a part of that discovery, being a part of the inquiry process. I think all that is belonging in math. And I believe that, you know, it's in a large part to the way a teacher creates that space of belonging, right? You know, as a teacher, we have to create a space where students believe that they belong, that they believe that they can, right? Can what, you mean? They can ask questions. They can push back when something doesn't, you know, something's not gelling, and I get to ask the question and make sure that it makes sense to me, where I can, as a student, I can make mistakes, right? Belonging in math is when a child can see themselves in the mathematics, and ultimately really finding joy in mathematics. And I think over the years, we've started to lose that joy. Our students are losing the joy that I remember having in math class, you know? And, you know, even at, I'm sure we could all say that as we grew up, math looked a little different. You know, mathematics itself is not new, but the way we were taught is definitely different. And so there's a little bit of discomfort that comes with that, that I learned it this way, and now you want me to do what now? Right? And so when I think of anxiety, where you mentioned, and when I think of teachers around, you know, anxiety in mathematics, I kind of believe that that's one of the most under-discussed equity issues. Like, we just don't want to talk about it. And a lot of teachers who are teaching math, they're you know, quietly carrying their own areas of unfinished learning in some cases, and they have possible past experiences that weren't the greatest. And dare I say, they might be a little fearful of being exposed as someone who doesn't quite know the math the way they should. And so it's incumbent upon us to recognize that. And so when I think about what we could do, I think about, you know, as a leader, we have to create a space that that might be a possibility. Yes, we have people that have a math cert, right? But they still might have some questions if a student brings a method that they've never seen, right? What happens then? We have to be able to kind of normalize that idea that not everyone is 100% comfortable with every aspect of every standard that they might teach. And really, as a leader, saying, you know what? You're not broken. We've all had experiences that will make us uncomfortable, but we're going to try and do this together. I'm going to give you the space to talk to other people about it. I'm going to give you the space to do the math yourself, you know, before you have to stand in front of children who are like, what is she talking about? You know, and I think that leaders can help lower that anxiety, can help lower that that avoidance that, you know, that some may have by just allowing it to be, not pretend that it's not there. And I think in pretending that it's not there, we're almost saying that's a bad thing that you feel this way, you know, and you should keep it to yourself. Just figure it out and make sure that when you're standing in front of children, you know what you're doing, you know? And I think it's important for us to shift the script a little bit, and really help our teachers guide, you know, their mathematics towards understanding, sense making, you know, representations that we could show our mathematics in multiple ways, that there isn't just one way to solve a problem. We've got multiple ways that we can show strategies, that we can show representations. And I think in doing that, confidence grows. And when confidence grows, then you're almost willing to kind of let more challenges in, you know? Oh, you know what? What other way did we have to show this, right? And knowing that as a teacher, we can say, I don't know, but I'm going to find out, and not have to be the one that always has the answer. And I think if a leader helps teachers understand that that's part of the process, I think we would actually make a lot of strides, you know, in teachers asking for help when they need it. I was in a classroom today, and the teacher was like, I have to use an extra day to teach this topic. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, well, I got to understand why they did the partial products this way, right? Why didn't they just try to figure out the number that was closest to, you know, the dividend and work with that number? And I was like, well, we've got to think about the fact that our students are used to having some friendly numbers. So maybe they're going to start with multiples of 10. Then they're going to go, maybe they'll go to 5 after that. He said, so you mean they're going to have different partial products here to add up to our answer to the quotient? I said, yeah, you might. You might have this child say 20, 20, 20, 10, and you might have this child say 10, 10, 5, 5, 5, 5, because that's what they were comfortable with. And so having that conversation just showed me that the culture that was in that building was one that it was okay to have those conversations. And because of that, he was able to move on. He could have just hidden in the corner and say, I'm just going to give them the book. They're going to do the problems, and that's it. but he wanted to be a part of that conversation. And I think that that was, that really came out to me today, because our teachers aren't, they don't want to say that they don't know. Who wants to say they don't know, right? But it's in saying that you don't know that you can actually know. And I think that there's strength in that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'm really interested in a Cairo-aligned classroom. Can you give us a brief rundown of what this entails and how it improves student learning?
Absolutely. So being in many classrooms, I've started to see a lot of trends. We've talked about Cairo as a framework that I developed that really puts together a lot of the pieces that I'm seeing should be at the forefront of a math classroom. The Cairo, the C in Cairo is content. First thing is content, right? We want to make sure that our teachers have a strong conceptual understanding, not just procedural fluency, not just a bunch of tricks and tips, but things that are rooted in the concept, not those. I don't know if you remember, it was an article talking about myths that expire. I don't know if you remember that. And it's not about the things that just work in the moment, or things work because we're in third grade, but they're things that they're actual structures that will take place as the math gets harder or as our children grow. And so when I think about the content, number one, once our teachers feel confident in the content, they actually are more willing to take risks and really open up the conversation around mathematics. The second A in Cairo is affirming math identity. I think that once we start to position our learners as capable thinkers, we start to invite their words, their thoughts, their reasoning into the conversation. It's important because their strategies, the language that they use, bring in the cultural aspect of what they may bring to the table, becomes something that's honored. And I want to make sure that our classrooms are honoring the cultures that our students are coming from, the background knowledge that they have, and that they're not just these empty vessels that we now have to fill up, right? That they actually do come with experiences. They come with their own understandings. They come with, you know, their own ideas. And we want them to use that as part of the process. I in Cairo is investigation, which I think is a huge part of, you know, learning mathematics. And that instead of me just kind of, this is how you do this, and this is how you do this, we actually start with some type of investigation where students begin with thinking instead of the teacher telling. The students wrestle with some ideas about what they know and how it can apply to this concept. Before we start to get formal with methods and procedural strategies. The fourth is R, reasoning through discussion. When children are talking with one another in a classroom, it's the most beautiful sound. Just to hear children talk about mathematics, talk about what they understand something to be that might be different from what somebody else understands it to be. My kids used to think I was crazy because I was like, well, I think we have a math argument over here. I used to get excited because the kids had their own ideas. And at the end, we'd come up with something, but it was important for them to have that discussion. And so reasoning through discussion, talking and justifying, comparing strategies are central to the conversation. It's not, you know, if they don't talk, it's okay. No, I want to hear your ideas. And so reasoning through discussion is big. And then the last O is ongoing data or data refinement. And that data looks different. It has a lot of different faces, right? It's more than just they took a test, you know, and this is what their score is. This is what did the conversation sound like and what did I hear? Did I hear students justifying? Did I hear students in real time, you know, adjusting what they were thinking based on new information that they heard? Am I going to adjust my instruction on what I heard, right? Those are all different pieces of data that I encourage teachers to collect that is way more than just, you know, quantitative. And so when we're looking at just test scores, that's just one piece of the puzzle, right? And it's important for our teachers to think about that. And so when we put all of these chiral pieces together, content, affirming identity, investigation, reasoning with discussion, and ongoing data, they start to work together, and actually students learn deeply because they're expected to be a part of the conversation. They are expected to, you know, voice their opinion about what they think about the mathematics. And when students interact with mathematics in that way, they can't help but become stronger, right? Because they're going to become better thinkers, better talkers, and better doers of the mathematics. So we're not just memorizing steps. They actually start to see themselves as mathematicians. And at the end of the day, that's what I want. I want our kids to enjoy math and see themselves as a mathematician. And that being a mathematician isn't just about crunching numbers. It's really about, you know, what can we say about mathematics, and what do we know? What are we learning that's new that's really going to help us get to where we need to get to? So I try to use my Cairo framework as a basis for all of the interactions that I have with the teachers that I work with. And I'm starting to see that these are kind of like the non-negotiables. We have to have them discuss. They have to see themselves in this, or else they're going to sit back and really just watch from the outskirts. And it's all rooted in, like I said, the content that's important that our teachers have.
There's so much today. I can't believe we are already at the end of our, like, we're already at about 40 minutes. And so everything flew by, and there was just so much good stuff about what we can see in our kids and what kids bring to the table, but also how we can help teachers and leaders in all of the places be able to grow in their own learning to help then the students with their learning. So I really loved all of the pieces of those, though, that pipeline that's so important that you mentioned throughout our discussion today. And so we're towards the end here. So we are going to just go ahead and ask, if before we end today, can you just let our listeners know how to learn more about your work and what you do?
I'd be happy to. So your listeners can learn more about my work through numbernavigators.org. That's kind of where everything stems from. It's a website that just gives you information about Number Navigators. My email address, support@numbernavigators.org. And it's just a place where we can, you know, help focus on helping educators build content confidence, create classrooms where math anxiety is replaced with sense making and belonging. I periodically share resources. I have professional learning opportunities that I have some school districts taking part in. And then really just having like an ongoing conversation around math identity and being able to make sure that, you know, our teachers recognize the important pieces that are there. Social media, of course, I'm on there as well. So Facebook, on Instagram, I'm The Number Navigators. And so you'll probably see my youngest guy, Josh. He likes to tell math jokes because, again, I really want to bring back that joy of, you know, math is fun and it's funny, too. And so he tells his joke, math joke of the day on there. And so it's just and he's got a funny laugh, too. So you got to hear that. But he likes to tell his jokes on there. And then on January 21st, I'm going to be hosting a webinar, actually. And it's called I Do, We Do, Who Do? That's what it's called. where we're going to talk about the five myths that keep kids from thinking. The five myths that keep our students from thinking. And so I'd be happy to share with you the information for that, where people can get signed up. And, you know, I'm just really excited about where Number Navigators is going. And I just enjoy everybody on there for the ride. I really do enjoy mathematics. I really want to see all of our children succeed. I myself have three boys who have had all different experiences with mathematics. I have a ninth grader, a fifth grader, and a third grader. And they've all had these different experiences with mathematics. And this is, it's all kind of informed, you know, the path I'm taking now with Number Navigators. It's so important to me that children are in spaces where they're heard, where they can participate, and when they're expected to do the heavy lifting, right? And I think Number Navigators will help with that. So thank you so much for having me. This has been the best day this week for me.
All right. I'm sure it's going to get better. Karen, any last word here?
Thank you so much for joining us and for sharing about Cairo and that framework that's going to support our teachers and our students.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Well, thank you once again, Asali, for joining us on this month's podcast. Again, everyone, I hope you had a great holiday season. I hope you had a great break. And we will have you, everyone, back listening again in February. So thanks for joining us.
Awesome.
Bye.
Bye.
We hope that you have been inspired by this bold mathematics leadership conversation and will tune in to our podcast series each month. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. You can learn more about NCSM leadership and mathematics education and our upcoming professional learning events on the NCSM website, MathEdLeadership.com. You can also follow NCSM on the X at MathEdLeaders and using the hashtag NCSMBold. Until next time.